Joy Ajluni is the trailblazing serial entrepreneur from Silicon Valley who is now based in Dubai. Today, Joy is the co-founder of Fetcher. Fetcher is disrupting the Middle East retail market and has built a great company and platform. Fetcher has won numerous awards and has become the darling of the Middle East venture capitalists and investors, and has successfully raised money several times. Joy has also had a series of startups, including Bonfair, a platform for emerging designers, which also had a successful exit. Among all this success and noise, Joy remains very focused and vocal in developing the startup ecosystem and making a difference in the Arab world, particularly with refugees. Joy is a graduate from George Washington University in finance and economics. Every once in a while, you end up going into a place and meeting somebody who is uniquely special and manages to touch you in ways that you wouldn't quite imagine. I had the wonderful privilege and opportunity to meet Joy Ajluni a couple of years ago, and we connected instantly. She was crazy, she was smart, she was funny, she was loud, and today I came to her office. And the funny thing is, her office represents her amazing personality, her vibrant personality. So today she's been very kind to allow us to work with her and sit with her and chat with her team. And I'm extremely privileged to be here and with Joy. Joy, thank you very much for welcoming.
Thank you for that amazing introduction. Really flattering. Thank you.
So just to get the audience engaged with exactly what Fetcher is, can you just describe it in about 30 seconds to a minute, just to get a feel of what is Fetcher?
Yeah, we are an app which allows you to press a button. Somebody shows up at your door right now, picks up something and delivers it. Or we can fetch things. We can go pick up something for you and bring it back to you. Or we can fetch and pay, which is we'll go pick up something, pay for it, and bring it back to you. So we are like your personal friend in need when you're stuck at your fingertips. And it's a Fetcher app. You just download it, and we're there.
You deserve that and way, way more. I mean, it was, you know, an instant sort of connection with you, which was just so funny. And we haven't stopped laughing since.
That's true. That's 100% true.
And love your team. Love the energy.
Thank you.
And, you know, we've just been walking around, you know, meeting people, hanging out. And very seldom, even in young companies and startup companies, do I actually see this relaxed atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And the people are busy. They're focused. Mm-hmm. But they are relaxed. And I find that extremely, extremely empowering. How did you build this culture? How do you select people? How does this all come together for you?
Well, the culture, it comes from the top, right? It's you who builds the culture. And culture is really important because we want everybody at Fetcher to feel connected to the brand. People work for more than just money, right? You have to recognize people and put them in position of empowerment to actually make a difference for you. And when they feel like they're doing things that are actually helping the company grow, they feel empowered by it because they feel connected to the brand because their contribution actually is growing the business. So we empower them to make decisions and we empower them to do what's best for the company.
What are the top two or three words that come to your mind when you think of your brand?
So I think I would probably say it is a brand that is for everyone, right? We want people to feel connected to the brand. So warmth, connection, and fun, and different. We want to be different. You know, I say this all the time when I speak, is that, you know, in a world of Dubai where everything is unreachable, right? Yeah. Platinum and exclusive and, yeah, you know, membership. We want none of those things. We want to be the people's brand. We want, and I've talked about this too, we want to be accessible. We want you to know that, you know, whether you're, you know, the guy cleaning the toilets or whether you're the CEO of the company, you're the same to us. Everybody's the same. So it's that equality and reachability and accessibility that we want to bring. We're everybody's brand. We belong to everyone. And I think that's really the nature of Fetcher.
When you're hiring people, what are you looking for? If you get a CV or whatever, or people just walk into your office?
That's easy. Passion, my number one thing. I want someone to have ownership and passion.
how do you see passion? What kind of a question would you ask me to see what my passion is?
You know, it's a feeling that you get. Mm-hmm. It's like an instinct that you get. When you speak, you can see the person's eyes light up. When you ask them questions like, what can you bring to Fetcher? What can you do here? And they start talking about what they're passionate about, what they can do. You could see their eyes light up. Because I always ask everybody, you know, when they do an interview, what are you passionate about? Because if somebody loves what they do, they're gonna come every day and bring the best. So, you know, they'll tell me, well, this is what I can do. And I always change the subject to, I don't care what you can do. What are you passionate about? And I think that's a very important question.
My experience with downloading the Fetcher app was actually very good. It was seamless, it was light, and it was fun. And so, well done. My personal user experience was actually very good.
Well, thanks. You caught us on a good day. Yeah. No. I mean, we are not perfect by any means, right. And God knows we've made our share of mistakes. Yeah. We're a startup, so we're growing and we're learning. And we make our mistakes. I always tell anybody who's doing a startup, if you're launching a product and it's perfect, you've launched way too late.
Way too late, absolutely. Talking about mistakes, and I will go beyond that. I'll probably ask the failure word. What does failure mean to you, and how do you celebrate failure in your organization?
Failure means making a mistake that's obviously didn't work out and cost you some money, mm-hmm. time, and people. And pushed you back a couple of steps. That's what failure is. But yes, you do learn. Coming from Silicon Valley, there's a culture of, you know, if you fail, that's good because you learn something, right? Where I think here in the Middle East, it's very different. You failed, you're a loser. Well, we don't look at it that way. God knows we've made our fair share of mistakes. Right. But now I know, like in the next contract, I'm going to add this.
Yes.
In the next, you know, negotiations, I missed this because, you know, we missed it in the last error that we made. So failure doesn't mean what it means to most people, I believe, in the Middle East. Failure is different for startups.
I have what I call the five F's of failure.
Yeah.
And no laughing allowed.
Right, I'll try not to.
Yes. So it's fail fast.
Yes, absolutely.
Fail frequently.
Yes.
Fail frugally.
Yes.
Failure is not fatal.
Yes.
And fail forward.
Forward, that's interesting.
Always fail forward. You don't fall back, you fall forward.
Interesting.
And if that's the body motion. And failure is the only bad F word that I can think of. So the other ones are much more fun. But it's just something that we need to be able to engage mm-hmm. with and learn from that.
For
and
sure.
Actually, I'm setting up my own failure CV, all the things I failed at.
Mm-hmm.
So next time people ask me, because I don't need a job, I have my own company, so I don't give a shit. Sorry.
We don't give a shit, is what he means.
Yeah. So you know, I'll sort of put on my CV all my failures and sort of say, well, this was my learning and this is how I move forward.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people come to me and they say, hey, you're a startup. You know, what lessons can I learn from you? Like, what did you do wrong?
Yeah.
And I love hearing those questions because it means that you know, at least that the new entrepreneurs understand that they're going to fail.
Yeah.
You know?
One of the things that I find difficult as a startup myself is it's a very lonely business by being a startup. How do you feel you're fortunate enough to have a co-founder? What role does he play with you and for you in the sense of this lonely journey?
Great question. We both had really bad experiences in our last companies where we were with co-founders and we didn't have the easiest ride in the world. And we had a lot of mistrust going into this when we partnered. He was like, how do I know you're not going to do this? And I remember looking at him and saying, how do I know you're not going to do this? Because we both were burned with our last partners.
Yeah.
And a lot of startups will tell you that most startups break up because they break the partnership.
Yeah.
And you got to have flow within the team because, you know, it's like a family unit. Like if the founders aren't in perfect harmony, then the rest of the company will feel it and it affects them. So I think, you know, it's definitely a lonely place. You don't have much of a life. And as a co-founder, you spend most of your time calling each other saying, did you do this? Did you do that? It's really important that you find a co-founder that that you mesh with, that you have a good relationship with. But with that being said, I've seen co-founders who've known each other for 20 years and they start a business and they never speak to each other again. And then there's co-founders like Idris and I who've known each other for a week and we get along amazing. So sometimes it's a little bit of luck. You can't predict these things, you know? But it is a very, you know, getting back to your question, it is a very lonely place because when you spend every minute of every second of your day thinking about your company, you share that with the person who's your co-founder. So you have a deep trust and friendship.
I talk a lot about entrepreneurship and startups in this particular case, and that is one of the two, three, four critical things that we need to make a startup succeed. And to me, one of them was actually to find a co-founder so that when you have your ups and downs, the other person is actually there to support each other, basically. What other two or three critical things for a young startup to succeed?
You know, I'm going to use this word, trust. I think it's really important. You know, in my last venture, we didn't trust each other. We didn't trust each other's judgment. We didn't trust each other's expertise in a particular space. I think you need to trust the person that you are with, your partner. And I think it's better if you do two different things. My partner and I are completely experts on two different subjects. He knows things, you know, much better than I do, and I have a grasp on things that he has nothing. And he trusts my opinion, and I trust his. And I just think trust is probably the big one.
But what other factors, not just about the founder, but as a young company, what are the sort of things that we should really be cognizant of and aware of in terms of being able to find that?
Finding it, I don't know. I mean, I can honestly tell you that, you know, with my first partner, I knew him very well, and it didn't work out. We didn't trust each other. We fought all the time. Idris had the same experience, my co-founder, with his partner. Like I said, Idris and I knew each other, I think, a week when we decided to. But some of it has to do with luck and maturity, I think. You know, I think we both went through difficult situations in the past, and then it's a second go around. So I think there was some level of failure, if you will, and that failure brought a level of maturity to this relationship.
Yeah. The world is growing exponentially in terms of technology and change and software just going literally almost vertically. You fortunately have got yourself on that vertical trajectory. How do you do that? How does one get onto that gravy train going up?
Talent. Hiring the best possible talent that you could find. I think that's it. I mean, we're a tech company and our whole soul is tech, right? Finding really good people who are passionate about the vision that you have. That's how you get on that projection. It's the people.
So would you agree with what Steve Jobs used to say, that I much rather have 10 great people than 300 average people?
150. And we've made that mistake ourselves at Fetcher. We hired quantity, and now we're getting to the point where we're really dwindling it down to quality. But absolutely. I mean, Steve Jobs was a brilliant man and a legend for a reason, right? But his words are wise.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Quality over quantity any day.
In this steep curve that you're on, and I think about Moore's Law, you're doubling every year. You're actually 10xing every 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
How does one... What are the few things that we need to do to get into a 10x mode? Is it thinking? Is it heart? Is it trust? Or is it a combination of all of that?
I think it's projections. You put it up on the board, and you get your best team together, and you say, this is where we need to be by this day. How are we going to get to this number by this day? And then you work it backwards. You say, how are we going to do this? A, what is your opinion on how we're going to get there? B, how is your opinion on how? And you sit with your team, and you actually put concrete things on the board of how you're going to do them. And then every week, you go back to what did you accomplish to get to that point. So you really got to put it down on paper. You can't just say, okay, we're going to get to this number by this date. Well, how? You have to put baby steps and reach those baby steps and put them down.
So the big visualization is really important for you.
Oh, absolutely.
So as President Kennedy said in 1961, we're going to the moon.
Yeah.
And we're going to get there
yep.
in this decade. And yep. they got there in 1969.
Exactly.
And is that your philosophy of moonshotting every day?
Projections. I believe that the world is about energy. It's my California,
yes.
my California thing. Actually, my phrase on the wall right there is everything is energy, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Match the frequency of the reality you want, and you cannot help but get that reality. It can be no other way. That is not philosophy. That is physics. Albert Einstein said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if you project it and you envision it,
yeah.
you can
make it happen.
You can make it happen. But the first thing you need to do is project it and envision it. That's my biggest philosophy. It's on my board, and I believe in it. The world is energy.
In that energy, what about those people who are really just heart-focused? I mean, I saw the finance department there and the HR department there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you enroll them in this particular process? Because they are designed to be logical and
mm-hmm.
and strategic, and you know, less strategic, more logical process and hardworking. So,
but again, it's the energy. We get them together,
yeah.
and we... You know, very Steve Jobs like when he gets his team and he stands up on stage and he starts talking and he starts projecting the energy and the vision
yeah.
of where we're going to be and how every single member of this company is a part of that atom that is going to build this vision. You get them excited because you're connecting them to the dream, and it's your energy. Again, it is about energy because it's your energy that's creating that, and it's your energy that's being past. That's how you build the DNA of the company. That's how you build the energy of the company.
So you should be chief energy officer because you talk about energy so much.
You know, it's funny. So when we were talking about official titles, I wanted to call mine chief magic officer.
Okay.
Because I believe
magic is good.
Because I believe in this energy.
Yeah.
You do create, you envision it, and then you create it and you make it happen.
Yeah.
And again, this is not philosophy. This
yeah.
is Albert Einstein.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. No, and
so
I think you believe in that yourself.
I totally do.
You do. I can tell you do, right? You do.
And my brain's just working. Like
you do. It's like you create your own reality.
Yeah. I mean, I think the CEO is the chief energy officer. The chief marketing officer mm-hmm. is the chief magic officer. So we can keep the titles the same, just change the words.
Yeah. Well, there's a philosophy in Silicon Valley, which mm-hmm. I love, which is if you're president or vice president, then your job is not meaningful. Like
yeah.
in Silicon Valley, they make up titles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think the head of engineering for Google,
yeah.
they had a thing. I think her title was Chief Princess, Chief Princess Officer or something. She was on 60 Minutes.
Right.
But that was her title. She wasn't head engineer.
Right.
You know?
I mean, I constantly talk about being an evangelist and all those kinds of words because I think. And
you're building a dream, right?
Indeed. And I think that's where what a lot of people miss. They get stuck in logic and they forget the dream. And I think we need to find a way to combine the two and bridge the two.
100%. It's getting your team to believe in your dream.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How does anyone lead anything?
Yeah.
They have to believe in the vision of what you are bringing, right?
Yeah. When young people come to you, let's say a 16-year-old would come to you and say, Auntie Joy. Should I just call you Auntie Joy?
I like but, that. I have nieces
okay.
and nephews, so yeah, I'm used to that.
Okay,
yeah.
So Auntie Joy, please tell me what should we be doing? I'm a little bit confused because I get these different ideas and thoughts being thrown at me from all around me. What's your advice to
as
them?
As a woman?
As a woman, as a young person.
Well, I talk about this quite often. I think women today are focused too much on what we've talked about
yeah.
in the past, the
yeah.
silly Instagram, Facebook. You know, I think it's become a very lonely place.
Mm-hmm.
It's been proven that these things are addictive
yeah.
because they give you a false sense of happiness
yeah.
And recognition, which is not real.
Mm-hmm.
Half the pictures are photoshopped. I would tell this younger generation that do something more than what you look like, right? Because that's just fading, right? Do something that you can set a goal for and that you can accomplish that you're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Not that your eyeliner is perfect or that your lips were lined perfect. Like,
yeah.
do something as a human being that you're proud of, that you've accomplished, that you've set a goal and that you've hit that goal. Yeah. That's how you get self-esteem, not by how pretty you look. Yeah. And really, that is a voice that I want to constantly say to women, especially, you know, this new generation that I'm seeing that's so hooked on validation from social media.
Yeah. Do you have a mentor of any kind?
Mm-hmm. It's my mom.
Okay.
My mom is my mentor.
Anybody else that you can think of? Einstein.
Well, Einstein is my deepest philosopher of philosophy, or, you know, my role model. Like, obviously, he's Einstein, right? Yeah. He's a genius.
Yeah.
I have a couple of different role models. I don't have one. I mean, I have my mom. I have Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Sacrificed her whole life for the betterment of humanity. I have role models like Oprah Winfrey, mm-hmm. you know, who's actually, you know, done things for humanity and actually tried to change people's lives. I think my role models are probably women who are trying to make a difference, mm-hmm. because that's really my end game as well.
The kind of talking about mentoring, I have several mentors. Mm. When I ask this question, most people have an older person as a mentor, because that's how we are trained. I had a young Chinese-American kid who came in to do an internship with me last year. Mm. His name is Bill Feng. And in the 3 months he was with us, I learned more from him than he ever learned from me.
Wow.
So I have since then been thinking and working on what I call reverse mentoring. Actually, to have the 20-year-old mentor you and mentor me. So you just completely reverse that. Because in China, what they say is that if you want to think about the future and learn about the future, ask a child. Ask a younger person.
That's actually interesting. But I disagree with you on this for one reason.
Okay.
I believe that there's a millennium generation.
Mm-hmm.
And this millennium generation, to me, is oh, God, this is probably politically incorrect. It's probably the worst generation that we've ever put out. We hire a lot of millennials, and I can see that they're not as focused. They're more instant gratification driven. So I've actually done what you've said. I've sat with the younger generation, and I've asked these hard questions, and I've tried to learn from them. But what I've seen is that it isn't the best generation I've seen. I think this social media generation has made an instant gratification that if you're not feeling instantly happy, there's something wrong.
I saw this in Greece and Turkey when I spent a few years there, that the parents didn't have the money, but this generation likes brands and new money, so the parents overcompensate for what they didn't have.
Exactly. That's exactly true.
And I just saw that and I said, wow, this is exactly what my perception was there.
Yep.
Now,
but that doesn't necessarily bring you happiness. Being thinner and having more material items and being prettier and having nicer clothes and more social events, you know, this is the loneliest generation. This is the highest suicide generation, highest depression generation. Mm. You know, I think that it's geared so much on outside recognition that this is the generation that forgot to focus internally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. In reflection.
Let's get back to work and work situation. What gets you out of bed in the morning? How do you jump out of bed and just come in and say...
Coffee.
Coffee?
When the coffee's brewing and I can smell that in my bed, I'm like, coffee. I go to bed at night and I set the coffee maker and I dream about waking up in the morning to get my coffee. So, but I'm being serious about that, by the way. It is the coffee that gets me up in the morning. I'm just passionate about what I do.
Mm.
Really, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about. Yeah. I'm passionate. I get up in the morning and I set goals of, you know, numbers I want to hit and countries I want to enter. And then when I achieve them, it excites me. It thrills me. It makes me feel good about myself because I set a goal and I accomplished it. So I get up in the morning with, what else can I do? And that's sincere and it's passion. And that's what we talk about.
You have been a consummate fundraiser. Almost like, I don't know how the hell you do it. But you certainly have.
Listen, raising money is not easy.
It must be for you.
No, because it's not easy.
Because you just keep raising tons and tons of money, and you just go there and you just do this, and they say, okay, how much to give you?
Well, it's not just me. It's Idris.
Idris, okay.
And I,
Idris going in there and sort of saying, so how much money do we give you? Where do we sign? How do you do that? This is just, what's the secret sauce? I need to know this.
Well, in the beginning, when you have no money and you just have an idea, you have to sell the person on your dream.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have an idea.
Yeah.
So there's nothing concrete. It's just the vision, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the person on the other end of the table is there to listen, and you're there to sell. So really, at the end of the day, it's selling, right?
Yeah.
If you don't believe, you know, everyone says, oh, you can train a salesperson. I laugh at that. You can't train salespeople. You know that. You can't train somebody. It's easy for me to sell and because I believe in what I'm telling you. And you can feel it. Again, it goes back to energy. We talk about the energy. It goes back to the energy. You're sitting across the table, and you can feel that I really believe in this. So therefore, you're buying it. And it's not an act. It's not a con job. It's I truly believe in what I'm doing. And so there's a part of it that is sales. Let's face it.
So your core advice here is that
really
become real and authentic and come from the heart. Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
And because I think
people will pick up if you're coming from your heart.
Yeah.
They know. They feel it.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that is potentially some of the things that we miss even at university, because they're not training us to do that. They're training us to be smart, as opposed to be.
Well, there's EQ and IQ, right?
Yeah, and it goes even beyond the EQ piece. Yeah. Actually,
it's about connecting to people,
yeah.
Right? At the end of the day, we're humans, right? You have to connect to somebody else,
yeah.
Right?
So technology, I'm a technologist and a futurist in many ways. So a product like IBM Watson, that's taking the left side of the brain. And a wonderful phrase that I heard was that 25 years ago, the internet commoditized and democratized information and content.
Interesting.
Today, 25 years later, IBM Watson and artificial intelligence and cognitive computing is actually commoditizing and democratizing expertise, not knowledge, expertise. Because knowledge is now available everywhere. Now it's expertise. So if I'm a doctor or a lawyer or an oncologist or an actuary. Mm. My expertise used to be here.
Yes.
So if I'm a doctor, I was here and the nurse was here. In 5 to 10 years' time, it actually reverses. Because you don't need the expertise of the doctor as much, because you've got Mr. Watson standing here, or your Google Glasses connected to the cloud. So every single thing is coming in, and they can do a better diagnosis in that way than from the doctor. So the doctor comes down here and the nurse goes up there, or the doctor's role changes to becoming a caregiver. A lawyer becomes a trusted advisor. A banker becomes a financial friend. Mm. So the right side of the brain, which is energy, humanity, love, intuition,
imagine,
that's what you cannot. So this is how...
It's going to become more important as this... Yes, absolutely.
So the phrase that I use is anything that can be digitized and automated will be.
Yeah.
And anything that cannot be will be 100 times more valuable.
Interesting. I love that.
Thank you. That's my little thing.
I love that. It's actually right on the money.
Yeah. And
but at this generation is not learning to connect here because they're too busy connecting here.
Correct.
So that's going to be more and more of a rarity, that emotional intelligence, that not even just emotional intelligence, but that ability to connect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go to dinner with friends, and literally we're there to get together, and everybody's on the phone at the dinner table, and I'm sure everybody in your audience can experience that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here to sit and have a meal with you, but yet everybody is on, you know. So, yes, this is going to become more and more of something that is rare, absolutely.
Yeah, so we need to become more right-brained.
Yes.
And because you're an energy person and you are
you're
following a dream, so you are very right-brained or tilted right-brained.
Completely right-brained.
And therefore you're successful. So is that the advice that you would give to young people out there who are looking for jobs today and say, you know, learn skills, but learn humanity? Or learn the soft skills.
I would love to tell someone to learn the soft skills, but I honestly believe these are things that are born. and that are taught as a child. And I think it's passed down from mother to daughter to son. I think these are things that are in your DNA. It's a personality trait, right? And it's also things that can be taught. But I really, at the bottom of it, I think it's the DNA. It's who you are as a person, right? It's who you are as a human being.
I'd like to challenge you, not today, but I would like to challenge you on that, because I think there are elements of DNA. I agree with you. However, what we do, people like yourselves and myself, is that we unlock people. We give
them...
We try. Often I do. Unlock is one. Inspire.
You know,
so those are the elements that are there.
You can, yes, in moments. But look, I see an old man crossing the street by himself, and I'm able to connect into his loneliness, and I feel the sadness that he's got nobody with him, and I can actually feel that. You know, I don't believe that you can teach that amount of empathy and to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. I think that's a heart and a DNA as well. I think some things can be taught, you know, to notice other people in a learning lesson, but I think the actual feeling it, I don't think that's something that can be taught.
Okay. The people who will be watching this interview, it's going out to 25 million people. A lot of them are looking for jobs. What do you say to them is, and I would say a vast majority of them are unlikely to get a job quickly or easily. What do you say to them? How do you give them hope?
To be extremely, extremely determined. I've hired people that I saw their resume and I was like, yeah, this is not a fit. But dear God, they sent it to me again, and they sent it to me again, and they sent it to me again, and they said, can you just meet me? If you don't like me, it's okay. Can you just meet me? I'll meet you anywhere you want to meet me. How about a cup of coffee? Any place. I'll get you a cup of... I mean, I'm like looking at the resume, and I'm like, dear God, the resume is just not working.
Yeah.
But the sheer energy and determination, I was like, I got to hire this person. This person wants it. And it's passionate about being here at Fetcher. And I have not been wrong on that, because that continues.
One of the insights, an interesting insight that I got with another great leader like yourself, who I interviewed for this series, where he said that we take average, above average people and we make them rock stars. We make them great. We give them platforms to rise. And because the people coming from the top, they become very entitled anyway, but the people who are rising, they're the ones who give their heart and soul.
Yeah.
Is that your experience too?
100%. Yeah. You hire somebody and you put them in a position that you trust them, and you let them soar. Otherwise, you shouldn't hire them at all. There has to be an element of trust, and but you've got to see that they're passionate. You've got to see that they're in it, that they want ownership, that this is, you know, that's important. You don't want employees coming to your company who are there just to collect a paycheck. That you're never going to succeed with that. It has to. People are never working just for the money.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really important. And if I see, for all those unemployed people, show me determination, show me relentlessness, and your will, and your drive to get this job, even though I've told you no 50 times, and I'm going to give it to you, for sure.
In my very first job, I had a similar experience. I had to go to almost 300 doors before I got my first yes.
See?
And the person was, where I got the job, wanted to know what I was doing. And I had my little briefcase, and I opened up and I said, this is my list and this is how I'm doing it. And I'm going street by street, door by door.
I love it.
And he said, can you come tomorrow morning at 12:30? I want you to meet my partner. And I'm just like, okay. And that's how I got my first job.
Exactly. You were determined.
Yeah. I wouldn't let go. And
so many people are just, you know, they like, yeah, you're not for us. And they're like, okay, thanks. Okay. You know, proof to me that you're in it to win it, and that you're determined and you want it badly, and I'm going to give it to you.
We're talking about money and we're talking about scale. Profitability, sorry.
Oh, yeah. We are definitely not profitable. Takes time for startups to be profitable. And that's, you know, sometimes people come to me all the time and they say, oh, you don't have to pay taxes here. I go, guys, you know, it's different America. You have to pay taxes. I'm like, guys, you don't pay taxes in America unless you're profitable. So I don't pay taxes in America either, because I don't make it, you know, we're not profitable. So that's something I giggle about all the time. But yes, it takes time to be profitable.
So how do you connect the dots as far as the startup ecosystem is concerned here, because it is still very raw and is very young and still learning in terms of understanding that a loss-making company, you could still keep investing and it's still growing in value.
Oh, yeah. It's about market share. I mean, Uber has collected how many billions of dollars? They're not profitable.
Yeah.
Amazon, I think, just became profitable, if I'm correct on those stats. I don't want you to quote me on that. But, it's about market share. It's about growth. As long as they continue to see that you're growing, that eventually you'll figure out how to become profitable. And that's Silicon Valley, right? You can be worth $1 billion and not be profitable.
But how do you monetize that market share, and how do you genuinely make money?
By going into bigger areas and other countries and working on your unit economics to get that down. I mean, the more of scale you have, the leaner you can become.
You just closed a round, congratulations, of fundraising. What was that experience like?
Not easy. You know, everybody thinks that raising money is easy. It's not easy. Mm. Woman, man, anything. It takes time. It takes time. And I think in this region of the world, it's venture capital is still very new, right? So it takes time. There's an education process where the people who are actually giving you money are learning as they're giving you the money. But, you know, with more companies like Souq and other companies like these, as they grow more focus and they become successful, then there'll be more focus on startups, right?
So was that, in your opinion, a catalyst for you managing to close your deal? Because people like Souq. I mean, it's the whole sense of the marketplace becomes suddenly more buoyant. And you're providing the last mile.
It's about attention, right? Anything like when somebody like an Amazon comes into the region and feels like it's worth buying something here in this region, it just focuses a light like, hey, it just focuses a spotlight on this region. So that's good for all startups and the ecosystem.
Indeed.
That an international player like Amazon is interested.
Yeah. But Amazon comes in here, they grow the e-commerce ecosystem. Mm-hmm. You are an integral part of that because you literally provide the last mile. You're the ones.
We hope so.
Without you, this world doesn't, nobody gets anything.
No, we need the last mile for sure.
And is that how you sell? What's your pitch to an investor?
E-commerce is growing,
and
it's growing very quickly here in this region of the world. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, e-commerce is last mile. Last mile is e-commerce. I mean, everyone makes e-commerce this very sophisticated word, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's shipping. E-commerce is shipping. So everybody knows that it's booming. Mm-hmm. So we are the missing link. You need, at the end of the day, is it easier for me to sit on my laptop and order something, or is it easier for me to go to the mall? Well, obviously, it's easier for me to sit on my laptop, but who's going to facilitate that?
Yeah.
It's the shippers. So we really see ourselves as e-commerce enablers, right?
Yeah.
We're the missing link to get that growth.
How do you manage temptation? Talking about business, of course.
I manage temptation a lot. Yeah. To be honest with you, I do a lot.
Yes, it's a temptation like, well, here's $100 million. You got whatever percentage you've got. You know, that's basically FU money.
Not about the money.
That's why I'm asking the question.
If you're an entrepreneur, if you're a real entrepreneur, it's not about the money.
I agree.
It's about the accomplishment, you know? And I know people are like, yeah, it's about the money. It's really not.
But if you say that to an investor, he'll throw you out. It's not about the money.
Yeah, because for them, it is about the money. But they want the money.
Yeah.
But for them, they want to see an entrepreneur who's passionate and not looking for the money.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way you're going to get to success.
So when an investor asks you, so what's your exit strategy? What is your exit strategy? But because you have so much passion and heart, it's like chopping an arm off and giving it away, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, because it's my baby.
Exactly.
It's my baby.
So how do you cross-connect that?
You know, we're not at that point yet. We're still in growth. So we're not at a point where it's like, yeah, we're in exit strategy. I mean, do we think about it? Yes, of course. I mean, will we acquired or IPO? Yes, of course. But believe it or not, I promise you, it's not our focus. Our focus is how are we going to get into three more countries at the end of the year? Because we feel like we're not there yet. Like Idris and I promise you, and if you speak to him, he will tell you the same thing. Like, we're not like, yeah, we want to sell. We're like, no, no, no. We still need to do this, and we still need to do this. We feel like we're still so far before any of that recognition. We're both very humble. I mean, I don't know how to say that without saying it, but we both are very simple at heart and driven by the same things.
It's interesting because as you see investors out there, they almost want money to be the driver and the end game. It isn't for me, it isn't for you, and most of the great entrepreneurs don't see it like that. However, the investors do. If I see a pitching competition and every single thing, what's your exit strategy? They don't know what your exit strategy is. That's one side. The other side is that if an entrepreneur is working towards an exit, and that's all he's thinking, he or she is thinking of.
Do you really want that?
Exactly. That's what I'm asking you. I mean,
No. I promise you, whether I had $20 in the bank or I had $200 million in the bank, I'm still going to shop at Gap.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, I'm a simple, that's not what makes me happy.
Yeah.
You see, what makes me happy is employing more people, building a company, building a dream, accomplishing what I set out to. That's what drives me. Not driving a Ferrari, you know, but that's very Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Like if you go to Silicon Valley and you went to Steve Jobs' house, he lives in a white picket fence and he doesn't have security or lives in a castle and he didn't have bodyguards surrounding him and he drove a Prius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't, you know. So I think it's the DNA of, you know, Silicon Valley is a very special place. And I talk about this for one reason, because if you talk to any of the entrepreneurs, what drives them is, okay, we made the money. What are we going to do with our money to change the world?
Yeah. You're a consummate entrepreneur. You've started companies, you've exited companies, you've grown companies. What advice do you have to us, to our environment? How do we improve this? How can we empower a whole new generation of entrepreneurs and startups here?
How do you make it cheaper for entrepreneurs to start businesses here? And I say this all the time. It's hard enough for IBM, who's got billions of dollars, to come here. When you're an opportunity entrepreneur, you've got no money. You're poor. You're broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the visa costs, right? We have 1,500 employees, and I've talked about this. You know, in a startup, you fire people because if it doesn't work, they go. But you're afraid to fire people because you just paid all that money for their visa. How do you make it easier and don't put these poor startups for the same rules and regulations as you do corporate people coming in? If I could sum it all up in one thing, is that how do you treat these poor entrepreneurs and set them up to be less money than you would treat? Why would you treat IBM the same that you would treat a poor startup? You shouldn't.
How do you see yourself evolving? How do you see this region evolving? And how do you see this company evolving?
I'm hoping that, you know, we're a role model for growth in this region, because we were born in Dubai, we were made in Dubai, so I'm hoping that we shine a light and that we have a nice exit that the international community can recognize, like, wait a minute, somebody did this in Dubai and they exited. There's talent out there, right? That's my first thing. And second of all, how do we help other entrepreneurs see what we did and have them do the same thing?
But while you're doing this, you've got to be laughing, you've got to be having fun.
I'm always having fun.
My name is
Joy, for God's sake.
Absolutely, joy of my life.
Joy.
It's a real pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much. It's been a wonderful experience.